Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey everyone, before we get into the episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our friend Jordan Brady's Commercial Directing Bootcamp. Jordan Brady, who's been on the podcast before and has his own podcast, is a commercial director. He's directed thousands of commercials. He has his own production company, and he's just this unlimited wealth of knowledge. From meeting the right people, to pitching on the job, to being on set and making sure your relationship with your clients is great so that you get more work through them. He knows it all, and he teaches all about it at his Commercial Directing Bootcamp. I haven't taken it myself, but I've heard from a few other people that have taken it that it is like incredibly awesome and it's very personalized. Everyone that's in the boot camp actually sends Jordan their work so that he knows what everyone's strengths and weaknesses are and how to help each person get on their path to directing commercials. From what I've heard, it's great for people that are already directing commercials a little bit and are trying to level up, and also for people that have been directing short films and are trying to get into the commercial world. So check out the bootcamp at commercialdirectingbootcamp.com. And Jordan is giving a discount to Just Shoot It listeners. If you put in the code JSI, you will get 10% off, which honestly is better than what the listeners of his podcast get. So it pays to listen to our podcast. Anyway, check it out. Jordan Brady, commercialdirectingbootcamp.com. Thanks. Welcome to the 123rd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Unlow. This episode was brought to you by patrons Alex Grabowski, Shane Collins, and Oscar Vaca. Today we've got Carlin Hudson back with us. She's going to catch up with us, and also we're going to answer some listener questions.
We answer a bunch of listener questions about IMDb Pro, about making your way as a director who doesn't do comedy, and getting your first job out of film school. It's a lot of fun, and we are excited to get into it. But before we do that, have we told you about our Patreon page?
It's growing. It's doing great, actually, everyone. It's a real treat. And we did our first email, like our first patron-only blast, like a newsletter. And so it's just a nice way to connect with the people who are contributing to the show. We figured that that's like a very concentrated group of people who are the most interested in the show. So we kind of are trying to communicate with them a little bit more. But like always, the show is always going to be free. And we really appreciate the extra support to help fund our editors and the website and all that other stuff.
And to help us plan this amazing live event that is going to happen very shortly.
It's our back-to-school event. It's going to be done before the end of the summer, we promise. So stay tuned.
Cool. So let's get into it.
Let's hop into this conversation with Carlin Hudson.
Okay, we are here with Carlin Hudson, former guest. Is this your third time or fourth time?
Who knows?
I think third.
You think third?
Yeah.
What it feels like.
Because the last time you were on, I was like, this is your 18th time on. And you're like, dude, it's only the second time.
Yeah.
So.
Got to be my third.
Yeah.
This is going to be the best one yet.
But so if this is a listener's first time with a Carlin episode, Carlin, you lived in Austin. You made a bunch of movies there. Then you moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And worked now with Richard Linklater.
Oh, yeah.
McConaughey.
Best friends. No,
like,
I don't know Matthew McConaughey.
And now you are directing a bunch of things. You just finished directing a show for Brett.
Uh-huh.
First episode just got 1 million views. Magically.
Is that right? 1 million views?
Well, I think we're like technically at
9 million?
Or 60.
Holy smokes.
By the time
it should break 1 million. It's
by the time
cool.
This podcast comes out. There is this girl on your show. I think I was telling Matt about her. Sophie Dossie.
Is that right? Am I saying it
She's
correctly?
The real flexible one that was
She's
on that one.
She's the contortionist.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I was telling Carlin this. I watched the pilot. Matt, have you seen it? I'm assuming you haven't.
No, I've seen the trailer, though. Well, a million other people have, so.
950,000.
Yeah.
No. It's. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but the reason I know about Sophie Dassey is because I was reading the comments, and a lot of people were like, Sophie sent me. I'm here for Sophie Dassey. And Sophie's not that prevalent in the pilot.
Yeah. Because she doesn't make the team till the second episode.
Mm. Right. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's all.
I ruined it for Matt. Just a tiny bit of context. She almost won America's Got Talent,
yeah.
right? She was like one of the, like second place or something.
I think she, I don't know, but she was one of the finalists.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she can like shoot a bow
flaming,
and arrow, flaming arrow yeah. with her feet at a bullseye. On Ellen, she did this thing where, or she showed like what she does on Halloween, which is she like walks upside down like a spider.
Yeah, she did this almost every dance at.
Does she enjoy it? Or is it for exercise?
She loves it. I mean, I would be like setting up a shot and she's just on the side walking like the exorcist.
If it were me and I was shooting a show and someone was doing something that they've done over and over and over again, that takes a lot of attention and that person has an expectation of, it would be like doing the same comedy bit over and over again.
Yeah.
Even if they're super funny, if you're like, dude, I've like heard this bit every fucking day for 40 days of shooting or whatever it is, I would be like, yo, cut that out. I am over it.
Try directing a show with 22 cheerleaders. I mean, sure. Every single day.
Right,
was
and
like,
half of them are like vloggers and influencers.
Sure. Yeah, they're just doing all this crazy shit all day, and you just kind of like tune out. Then on the side of the set, they're just like throwing each other in the air and doing like 1,000. Yeah.
Dude, when I...
Totally hazardous behavior,
yes.
too.
Right?
Like, it's funny to have kind of like that circus in the background. It's like what you see on fake movie sets in movies sounds
yes.
like what your set really was like.
It really was. And there's a scene where a bunch of cheerleaders were in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, was that a nightmare.
Oh, man.
Such a nightmare. Because the second you turn around, they're just doing all the shit in the pool, and you're like, okay.
Like,
and they're also kids, right?
They're kids. Most of them were, they were like 16 to 22.
Sure. Right. Kids. Yeah.
And they're professional cheerleaders, most of them.
Right.
So they're really good. And then they just like to show off and one up each other. And they would do like, one guy would do 4 black flips, the other guy would do 5. And. You know,
yeah,
it's a miracle.
I went
no
through a backflip phase. Okay, I get
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah, in your early 20s. Let's back up just a tiny bit and give Carlin a little bit of context about the show that you wrapped and is now out and getting millions of views.
Yeah, I was hired to write and direct 8 episodes of this series about competitive cheerleading,
and it's called Boss Cheer.
It's called Boss Cheer, and that's the name of the cheer squad is Boss Cheer.
I see.
And they were hot pink and black. It's real fun and girly. It kind of has like a Pitch Perfect sort of tone. Mm-hmm. I guess I could say it's starring influencers
mm-hmm.
and professional cheerleaders, including Tony G. Fresh, the choreographer of Bring It On 1-6, was our choreographer,
that's
which was
cool.
amazing. And he was the real deal. Yeah, so it was like cheer and dance. And
so when you have Tony choreograph stuff for you, how involved are you?
Pretty involved. I was at rehearsals the whole week beforehand, which was so fun.
But are you giving him the plan? Are you like, this needs to be like a good one, and this is a bad one, and here we have to have a fall or a break?
Yeah.
Or this
actually,
is an emotional,
yeah.
like kind of giving him the emotional beats to hit? Or?
On some of it, he's such a pro, and he's the cheerleading choreographer. He does all of the cheer stuff, so he knows way more than me. But I also had done so much research about competitive cheerleading in particular, which is very different than high school cheerleading, that I would say, I want a higher basket toss. Can we have a pyramid with 6 people? And so he, you know, I sort of had the knowledge to say, let's like up the ante of the level of difficulty in this routine. And then they're halfway through, you know, they have a performance that doesn't go so well. So we work together to choreograph. Like there's a part where this guy flips into a bucket of soccer balls. And so we had to work that into the routine and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So,
and are there like any scripted injuries?
Yes.
And was that hard to do?
We'll see. I haven't cut that episode yet.
Oh,
are you not done editing?
No.
Oh.
They come out... this Thursday is the 4th episode.
Oh,
they
nice.
Come out every Thursday.
Oh,
at 3
I thought
PM.
I was under the impression you were done. So
no,
you're still in the edit room.
I'm still in post.
And
this morning I gave a bunch of notes.
Oh, how much time of your week is spent on that show?
Their post is in Santa Monica, so I really worked on the pilot with her, but after that I've just given remote notes. So I give pretty like super intense, two rounds of pretty intense notes.
Right, and Santa Monica is like 5 miles away from here, aka 3 hours.
So far.
It's literally 10 miles away and takes you 45 to an hour.
I mean, at least.
Yeah. One way.
With no traffic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the timelines are just so are so nuts, because tonight I'll probably get a cut to watch after I get home from doing this. And then we have to lock by tomorrow morning, because then it goes to color and sound tomorrow, and then it comes out on Thursday, and it's just a very quick process.
Right. So when this episode comes out of the podcast, there will still be a few episodes left to check out.
Yeah. So every Thursday.
Do you guys get a billboard?
I don't know, but they do have some billboards. Yeah. Brett, have you seen
them? I saw a Brett billboard. Yeah. I was like, if that was Carlin's billboard, I would photograph it and send it to her.
Yeah, a show, because I wrote two shows for them after I wrapped Boss Cheer production, Total Eclipse, which is one of their popular shows.
I saw the billboard.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not credited because I was just one of the two staff writers, but I broke the second season and wrote some scripts. Yeah.
That's awesome. So are you on salary there? Are you full-time employee?
Two weeks ago, I did not renew my contract.
Oh.
Because I was on, I would only sign a 2-week consulting contract, because I just was like, I'm not quite sure how long I want to do this. Mm-hmm. It's great, but it's, you know, very specific teen content, and, you know, sometimes you don't want to do that forever.
Yeah, you kind of get what you can out of it.
Yeah.
And
That's that.
Were you learning? Like, was it a good experience from, like, the writer's room point of view and all that stuff?
You know, it actually was, because the head of the company brought me in and he said, Carlin, like, you've got to be in that room. You know, you've been in a room before. And I was like, no,
you're
I like, haven't.
You're like, I have been in a room.
Yeah, I was like, no.
Like most people.
Great.
I have not been a staff writer. But it was cool. It was pretty small. And then for Total Eclipse, which is the show I was on for the bulk of 6 weeks, I also did their hit show Chicken Girls. This is so silly, but
what we're laughing about, though, like a million views on an episode.
No, the Chicken Girls movie just came out. It got 8 million views in one day.
Yeah, so that's so, and that's like a network TV show.
Does it
show
cost money to
that
watch
sort of views?
No, that's what this company is doing. That's different than other shows that we've been up for and have done, right? Because they're just putting it out for free and they're getting ad money. And actually, my show just got sold to Snapchat. And it's first series of theirs that Snapchat is licensed. So I'm sure I didn't see any more money from that. I called my manager and I'm like,
cool.
That's it.
Directors do not get much money after the beginning.
Non-DGA directors.
Non-DGA. I do have a clause in my contract that if Boss Cheer gets a second season, I get sort of a chunk of change regardless of if I'm involved.
Oh, really?
Which is nice.
Yeah, that's
cool.
Yeah.
Wish I had that.
I know, you should have had that.
Well,
now you
know. Form, the company that did it, is like really, their legal team is like really black and white, you know? They're like, these are our terms. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. And like call your bluff pretty much like instantly.
You've done a New Form show.
I've done a couple.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't get paid if there was another season, would you?
I don't think so. I don't know. It was a lot of these companies know that their stock and trade is in young, talented people who are still looking to prove themselves.
Yep.
And so my attitude with that sort of place is like, get in there, like gain that experience, do great work that you're proud of and that you can show other people, and then get out, because you have to have an eyes open sort of attitude about the whole thing. They are giving you an opportunity that no one else will. And also, that comes with some strings or some compromises, basically.
For sure.
So, like, once you've done it a couple times, you know, like I was saying, like you learn what you need to learn, you get that reel, and then like it's on you if you stick around, because there's another 25-year-old kid who is like so stoked to do this.
Yeah, and I don't know if they would have renewed my contract anyways, because I was making more than any other at that point was making more than the 23-year-old. Also in the room, because we talked about this. And actually, I was getting, I actually don't care if this is public, but didn't I tell you this?
I
told you, I was making less. There was three staff writers. At one point, it was three guys and me. And I found out I was making $250 less a week than the guys.
And they were all making the same?
Yeah. And I had already done this show for them.
Oh, proven this to is be a after success. Boss Cheer.
Yes, this is after Boss Cheer. And so I was pretty upset and called my managers and they took care of it. But I don't know what
Can
the point
I ask
was.
You how you found out?
Yeah, I just straight up, because one of the guys they hired was a pretty good friend of mine, and it was his first job with them. He's great. I mean, he's actually WGA. But I was like, how much do you make? I just had a feeling, because the other two guys were a writing team, and so I was curious, and they even got paid more than me as a writing team.
Mm-hmm. Like, they got more than twice as much as you, as
yeah.
a team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
And what I found out was they started negotiating my contract at a much lower rate than the guys. Mm-hmm. And that is what pissed me off. Well, just as like, I should have been paid less. We were all doing the same job.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
We should have been paid the same.
There's no argument when it's like, oh, it's a room of people. They all have equal experience.
Right.
Like, there you
yeah.
go.
Yeah. And so it got fixed. There's like a guy at that company who works elsewhere and isn't totally involved in the day-to-day, and so I don't even know how much they were, and I don't know how much everyone knew about salaries, but it's kind of interesting. I'm as y'all probably know, I'm pretty open about money, because the only people who have something to gain from being secretive are the people who make the most money and shouldn't be having those yeah, salaries. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I you know, it's a thing that is weird for people. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I get a little cagey about it. And also, I think that sometimes, like, you're taught not to brag, right?
Yeah.
And if you talk about a day rate, that can sound like a ton of money and can sometimes be a ton of money, but isn't really representative of all the jobs you didn't get or all the unpaid time that you put into
yeah,
those jobs.
The treatments you've written.
Or even just the prep time. Like, when we say a day rate, like, even for the job that you got, there's a lot of scouting. There's a lot of unpaid mm-hmm. type around that job, foregoing all of the things that you didn't get that it takes to actually book that job in the first place.
Right, but people want to, like, I'm part of all these women's groups, and they all want to know, like, generally, how much do you get paid as a commercial and branded director? And it's kind of hard to answer that question, but at one point I was getting about 10% of the budget.
Yeah.
Which seems semi-standard.
Yeah, I think it's easier to say that
it really
the bigger the budget,
on the budget
is.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When the spot is $50,000 or $60,000 all in, that's a lot harder to take 10% of the budget because it hurts the production a lot more.
Yeah.
Well, there is the issue when you are asking, like, I want the Steadicam and I have to have this thing and I have to have that, and they're like, well, we can take it from your line, and you're like, no, take it from your line. Like, take it from the producer line.
Have you ever said yes, though?
Yeah, I have. I've been in a couple situations where, I'm sure this happens to all of us, but you basically start on the job before you have negotiated, like, how much you're getting
yes.
paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how every job is. You're like, hey, can you just send us a sample? And oh, can you just write this thing up? Can you just send?
And yeah, you're
and you're like
no matter what,
three
yeah.
weeks into it, and you're like, you finally get the job. And you're like, by the way, how much am I getting paid? And they tell you, and you're like, oh. And they're like, is that okay? And you're like, well, you know, I guess I figured I did this other job with you. It was a 2-day shoot. This is a 4-day shoot. I thought it would be twice as much. Mm-hmm. I have to travel for this. I didn't have to travel for that one. And then they're like, well, how about after the job is over, we'll try to pay you this much more or something. So I've had those negotiations a lot. And you're right, because like it sucks to negotiate your salary before you have the job. Because
yeah.
you're always afraid that the negotiation is what will give your competition the job, you know?
But does it ever?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think that's a hard no. Yeah.
No, let's say like our friends at Sawhorse, right? They, a lot of times, they'll have three directors up for the same job. If one director, if they're like, these two directors want $5,000 and this third director, you know, we already agreed to $7,500, but he's complaining. He says he demands $10,000. And they're all three equal, you know? Let's say it's like the three of us up for a job. Like, there's no, it's not, you know, we all have our special skills, but at the end of the day, in Sawhorse's eyes and like Eben's eyes, you know, we could probably all do the job.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's
think that would
a reality where the three of us are all on that same list all the time, like pretty regular. I think like literally probably.
Right now, I think we're on a list for a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't want to talk about Sawhorse because
right.
of that's a conflict of interest a little
right.
bit. But I think that there's maybe a perception of like someone being more expensive or finicky or hard to deal with, that perception is separate from that. That keeps you out of even getting bid on certain jobs. Like, mm-hmm. if I was like, hey, Eben, I'm not going to do your $50,000 job. Don't fucking call me for that. Call me for that. It's fine.
Yeah, we're all like, I would take the job.
but if you're that sort of person, right? Or if they perceive that uh-huh. you're that, you don't even have to say it.
I have DPs like this. I have one particular who's like the best DP.
Yeah, you love that DP.
But he's a real pain in the ass with budget. And so if it's low, if it's too low, I'm just not going to even bother.
So when you get the big job, though, who do you think of?
Him.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I think that there's that.
Yeah,
but I think if we are all on the same list, I think that if you make $1,000 more than we do, I don't think it matters at all.
To Sawhorse.
In general, to a company that is hiring people like us. Once you're on the list,
so you
it's
guys,
so
if
hard
I make
to sell. $1,250
and you make $250 and it's a $3,000 budget.
That's a different, that's like
right,
crazy.
Right. No,
though.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But if you literally make $5,000 and I make $2,500, I don't think the budgets are big enough that I don't think they'll figure out a way to find that money.
Yeah, I guess a lot of, maybe it's just me. I'm pretty sure it's you guys too. But when you know you're up against other directors, you're trying to bring like positive ideas like, hey, I've actually shot at that place before. Oh, I know this actor that's great for that. You don't come in with like, hey, I'd like to get paid more, you know? I really need the money. So, in fact, you know, that's like instant don't get the job.
Yeah, I would never say it.
Always have to act like you don't need the money, especially when you need it.
Especially when you need it so bad.
This is turning into a money conversation, which isn't bad, actually.
Well, I do want to say one thing, though, which is kind of what I've over the years come to do, which is I'm like Harlan in talking about salary. Very openly, and I think part of having this podcast, Matt and I talk about this off the mic usually, but like, hey, how much does that pay? How much does this pay? Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm super comfortable talking to other like directors or whatever person is doing the same job as me about the salary, but I wouldn't be comfortable like telling a crew member on a commercial how much I make because they might hate me, you know, because mm-hmm. I went overtime or they don't like how I'm directing. Like, there's, you know, and they don't know that stuff. So to me, it's like when you're among other people that are doing similar jobs, that's who you talk to about rates.
I hear that loud and clear. And up until pretty recently, 100% agreed with that. I was at a party the other day with a friend of mine who has shot for me plenty of times. And I was like, hey, how much should you make on that thing we made? And he made the same as me.
The DP.
And I was like, oh.
How many days was the shoot? Was it one or was it more than one?
It was more than one. Yeah, okay. It was more than one. So, and that's how it ended up. Like, I think if you're on a commercial or a short, like a branded thing, a director tends to make a heck of a lot more than everybody else.
Because
but
you're spending
on the longer stuff,
10 to 20 times as much.
Carlin, are you making a day rate on all of these editing?
Absolutely not. I'm not getting paid for post either, which is why I'm not driving to Santa Monica.
And how long ago did you wrap?
A month.
A month ago. And mm-hmm. so, and you're halfway, two-thirds of the way through the edit right now? Right? So, like, you've got conceivably at least 2 more weeks, maybe even 2 months of unpaid work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 2 months of unpaid work.
Easy. When you I wrote it.
Right.
You know.
There you go. So then
you
do
got
that.
Paid for the writing.
I got paid separately. For the writing. Yeah. But and the writing was so fast. At least I got paid well for that because they were like, well, you have to have all 8 scripts this week. And we were like, oh.
that is an advantage of below the line work. Like you always know how long you're mm-hmm. going to work. So your rate might suck, but it's for one day. And if, as a director or writer or whatever, producer, sometimes your rate is like, okay, but then it stretches out over like 10 months.
But aren't you glad you have that information that he made, or are you not?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't decided yet.
Mm-hmm.
But so for, I think people below the line, department heads, tend to make between $350 and $500 a day, basically, right? On a non-union, semi-premium sort of thing.
Right.
And so, you know, you can, if you like a little bit of prep, maybe a tiny bit of wrap out, and that can add up pretty fast on like
to not that much less
show.
Than
yeah.
the director makes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of like a day rate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I am not to bring it back to my situation, but I am so glad that those guys were honest with me, because once they found out that I was making less, they were also like, that's bullshit. Why? Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that, you know, we talked. I'm glad I asked. I just asked. Yeah. You know what I mean? They didn't have to tell me.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it's good, right?
It's like, good.
That is the best example, too, of like, that's an apples to apples comparison.
Right. And not so most directing jobs aren't.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
But that one was.
Yeah. But also, you know, your point is totally valid of like, oh, like, we're protecting the people who are paying us.
Right.
And there is some intrinsic
right, but you don't want them to be upset with you either for divulging information.
Well, if they have something to hide, that's when they're going to be upset.
Right.
If they have nothing to hide and they're paying people fairly, then they shouldn't be upset.
Yeah, if the it's like, oh, industry standard, 10%.
Yeah.
Easy. That's an easy answer. Yeah.
I hate to sound like a socialist, not that I'm not, but you know what I mean? I just... Yeah, I do think especially for underrepresented communities, like you have to talk about it because people get paid less. And I don't even know. I don't think the guy who was negotiating my contract thought, I'm going to pay her less because she's a woman. I just think that he just naturally decided to start my contract at a lower rate.
Yeah, I mean, their thinking is just like, what can I get away with paying
absolutely
this person? Right? So like all of those biases are kind of like internalized, but it's like, oh, okay, like what can I... What's the lowest I can get all of these people for?
Right. And there was also some women younger than me, women writers in the room that I wanted to know how much I made so I could help them get their, what they deserve too. Because I was like, you're not going to fuck over this 23-year-old, you know? Because she doesn't know any better. I didn't know any better at 23.
Right. Yeah. That's why there's, you know, the favored nations helps too sometimes.
And unions, right? Right.
And unions, yeah.
When are we going to join the DGA?
Yeah. Are you thinking about it?
I'm not yet, no.
So favored nations, for our listeners, if you don't know, is when you basically agree that everyone gets paid the same amount. Everyone in the same position. So like if it's with the actors, all the actors will make the same. And then you just give them a producer credit and a bunch more money as a producer.
Yeah, but there are backdoors to fixing all
right
that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But does that count on... I guess they had that on my show too, favored nations. And then some people got producer credit.
Yeah. But it favored nations is nice for the producers also because they're like, hey... We're not negotiating. This is everyone's getting the same.
Everyone gets this, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a take or to leave it situation, and plenty of people just leave it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, anyway, we've been talking a while, catching up about Carlin's show, which is fun. But we do have some listener questions that would be awesome to get to.
Yeah.
So our first question is from Diona McMillan, and Diona says, "Hey guys, I'm a film director and writer, and I'm wondering if you all use IMDb Pro. I'm relocating out to LA. Awesome." And I'm at the point in my career where I want to find representation, so I've been considering getting IMDb Pro in order to research agents. I'm wondering if you all use the service, and if so, what for? Thanks. Well, thanks for writing in the question. I have a two-part answer. My answer is yes, I do use it. I use my wife's account. It's a little Netflix-y, I would say, in L.A., right?
Am I
divulging too much information?
I pay for my own.
But you thought it was only $10 or something. It's $120.
I know.
but does Chrissy use yours? Or do
no,
you?
She has her own as well.
Because
and
you
here's
have
why.
To have the pictures.
Yeah, exactly. So the big advantage for not sharing an account is you can upload photos. And so if you IMDb
Vanity.
Myself and Oren, I have pictures up and you don't. The reason I know that is because I emailed this.
And is it... But the pictures thing, I'm still on the fence about how important it is.
Look, if you look at any like agent roster, most writer directors don't have a photo up. So it's not, I don't think it's a deal breaker. I don't think it's like essential. So like Diona, if you just want to like partner up with a buddy and like, you know, not that I'm endorsing doing that, but I've heard that some people do that. That's totally it. The photos are not like essential.
Also, the person I was sharing an account with, she paid for it the first time. I don't share an account anymore, actually, but when I did, whenever I'd make an update, she would get notifications because it was under her email address, so that was pretty annoying.
Amazon owns IMDb now.
Mm-hmm.
Have they merged
I don't
accounts?
Know, but IMDb looks like shit now. Have you looked at
they
it?
Just,
they had an upgrade,
they
and
just
it looks
did
terrible.
It today. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bummer now.
Looks weird.
Yeah.
It's hard to
I wonder
navigate.
If we'll get used to it later.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The agency and contact information is on the left instead of the right.
Oh, IMDb Pro you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks great. It does not look good to me.
Yeah.
Well,
next time you're on the show, let us know how you feel about the design.
The interface is amazing. It is so intuitive.
But I guess my second part to that answer is, I guess I'm just curious where Diona is in her career, because I guess as the first step to use it to look for agents and managers, or to look for agents as a director, seems like maybe it's a little rushed. For actors, I actually, on this job I just did, one of our actresses found her agent through IMDb Pro. She just looked up the top 500 agencies and wrote them all letters with postcards, and she got four meetings, and she got two offers for representation. She signed with
Amazing.
One of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two parts to this question, basically. Is it valuable to look up who is represented by whom and all of that stuff? Yeah, definitely.
Right. A research tool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And there are circumstances where if you're trying to cast someone and maybe you want to sweeten the pot by having someone who's also rep by their manager or their agent or something like that. There are ways that you can kind of maneuver, basically, thanks to IMDb Pro. Are you going to get signed off of IMDb Pro? No.
No.
Right. Well, I don't think Diona's saying that she would get signed, but that she would find an agent to work with through there. And I guess... The way I think of it is you would find an agent, and then would you email them and say, hey, here's my work?
Unfortunately, I just don't think that it hardly ever works. Because, I mean, I don't know how you guys found yours, but I had multiple people at with their managers who were signed with them say to their manager, she's amazing, you have to talk to her, and none of that worked.
Yeah.
It never worked. And four people tried, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, that's a better way.
That's a better way. It's just still, you know.
I'll say I did do one thing with my manager, which is I said, I don't have an agent for film and TV. And he was like, oh, well, are there agents I should reach out to? And I was like, well, let me find other directors that I feel like do the same thing I do that are at my level or just a little bit ahead. And let me see who they're repped by.
That's cool.
And they were basically all repped at UTA, across the board. And then my manager sent them my stuff, and they're like, we're not looking for new clients right now.
Yeah.
Classic.
So
even if you are the person who is exactly right for them, if you're suggested to them, if it's not their idea, they're not
super
into it.
Yeah. You know? It's way easier, I think. Not easier. None of this is easy. But I think if your work is at a festival or goes viral or they see something of yours, that's when people will be like, oh, who made this? Mm-hmm. And that's when the meetings will come. So
yeah,
I think IMDb Pro is super useful also for just updating IMDb entries. They'll look at the pro submissions before the non-pro submissions. But in terms of finding an agent, I don't think it's that valuable. Yeah.
It's a good research tool, though, to see what sort of agents and managers are out there and look through the lists.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth $120, I think.
Should you get it? Yes. And Diona... I emailed her and was like, oh, yeah, basically answering this question. And she said that it was on sale last week, basically. And so I think keeping an eye, Carlin's shaking her head.
I feel duped.
She just paid full price.
I 2 weeks ago, just paid. Oh, no.
Well, check it out on Prime Day because.
There you go.
I
wonder if
it'll
be on sale.
Maybe not.
I just paid.
Oh, you just paid.
I just paid.
So you're making $250 more a week than you were last week. So
I am loaded.
You
no
are
doubt.
Fine. That's two IMDb Pro accounts. Maybe you should get me one.
Yeah. I only got the $250 bump, by the way, on my last 2 weeks, which is kind of a bummer.
Well, and you get a dollar bonus for every view on your series, right?
Yes. Yeah.
God,
oh, my God. I would be buying a house.
Yeah. Yeah, just one,
only,
though.
Just one. That's a modest home.
Cool. Well, thank you for the question. Let's move on to another question. We're just swatting these down.
Boom.
So we have a great question from, actually, this one comes from Ewan Williams, our webmaster. And Ewan writes, you are both funny with backgrounds in comedy. Do people that aren't funny, period, aren't mainstream funny, or are drama / horror / action oriented, etc., make their way into what you do ever? If they do, how do they do it? The majority of your guests seem to have some sort of comedy-centered background / experience, and all the advice around joining classes and the like is comedy, improv / improv related. And so, what's the deal? Can you make it if you're not into comedy?
I think you have a better chance.
If you're in comedy?
If you're not in
comedy. Oh, interesting. Why do you say that?
Actually, real quick question. I have, Carlin, how do you describe yourself as a director? Like in the way that I'm like, you know, I do like dialogue comedy, and Oren's like, I do VFX comedy.
I just today in an email described myself as for narrative work, dialogue comedy, and also now I can add music with a music and dance focus. Ooh,
there you go. That's nice. That's nice. But so you still kind of put yourself in the like
comedy and dramedy.
Yeah. It's harder to say dramedy because like I think that's what we all kind of want to do.
There's more and more. I feel like there's more and more dramedy jobs though.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I actually feel like I'm up for dramedy stuff lately. Even a dramedy commercial. I didn't get it, but I think I like including dramedy because it implies that I also do grounded comedy.
Yeah. Well, when I say like, I do a lot of digital and I'm a comedy director, my fear is that people think that I shoot influencers screaming into their cell phones. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like, broad, like shitty comedy. Like, that's my nightmare.
Think that.
Yeah, sure. But like, when you hear digital comedy,
yeah,
the worst version is.
Why do you need to put digital in front of it?
I don't say digital, but like, you know, when you look at my credits, you know.
Right, but you're a comedy director.
Sure.
You're a comedy director.
Yeah, yeah. This is about Matt and Lowe's anxieties.
When I first saw your website, I was like, holy shit, he's directed for Key and Peele. I was like, he's the real fucking deal.
Yeah. I was like, because what does it say? Writer, director, third thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, man, he already has me beat.
It's a clean joke. Yeah, I feel good about that joke.
Yeah, that's like rated G, I think.
G for good?
No, for clean. It's a clean.
Sometimes orange jokes, it takes me a moment to catch up.
Yeah, me too.
that's nice of you.
Okay, so how can you make it without being a comedy?
Can you do it without being a comedy?
Right.
Director?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so, yes.
Yes, I think hard yes. I mean, I would say most of the TV... Wouldn't you say most TV jobs aren't comedy?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, like, Ewan is saying... I guess I feel like everything has comedy in it and everything has drama in it, right?
Have you seen The Handmaid's Tale?
Sure, there are no jokes.
of Fred, come on.
I think what we're really talking about, though, is... Yeah, that's a great pun. There's a bias in this show.
I got
show,
that one.
Right? Like, because we both come from a similar background, you know, we're pulling in a lot of directors from Funny or Die and College Humor and like just like the people that we know. Like that's just the reality of how we started sourcing people. And I think we've really made some good strides towards like getting outside of that network because we kind of we're running out of friends to just be on the show. But I think that paints an unfair picture of how to make it. It's a fault of the show, really, if I'm being honest.
Right, of our show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, let's try to come up with a list of ways we've heard of people making it, right? The number one easiest thing is to get your friends together and shoot something funny that resonates with some people and put it on YouTube and get viral and just become a better and better filmmaker, right? Like, I think there is comedy in everything, even drama. Yes, Handmaid's Tale maybe is an extreme example.
Most drama
but like,
has some levity.
But sure. Game of Thrones and Atlanta, they're all like have real funny moments.
But Atlanta's
is a comedy, I guess.
Yeah,
but there people get shot and stuff.
But I guess what we're saying, not to split hairs, is that like there's a difference between a show that has jokes in it, mm-hmm. which I think we would all aspire to, like we would love to direct, versus like a Will Ferrell movie, right? And so, like, you put comedy, Funny or Die, College Humor, like a joke a minute, a 30 Rock episode. That's one thing. And then there are things that we would all like to direct that are dramas with jokes in them.
Yeah, I mean, is this question more...
I might be reading into this a bit much, but I think he has a little self-consciousness about thinking, like, you know, I'm not, like, the funny guy in my group of friends.
Right.
But I want to... be a filmmaker.
I'll
I am
give
a
an
filmmaker.
Example of a friend of mine who does not make comedy at all and is doing better than any of us.
Ooh.
David Lowry, he does not direct comedy. He directed Pete's Dragon, which has levity.
Oh,
interesting. His next movie is Old Man of the Gun. He directed a ghost story.
Yeah.
Well, Madeline was saying, but do you have to be funny to direct comedy?
Oh, to direct comedy.
Well, I think she was bringing a different, is comedy the only way, the easiest way in? And B, what if you're not funny? Can you still direct comedy?
Super interesting.
I think everyone's funny. I guess I think everyone is funny and everyone can be good at math and everyone, like, to me, comedy is.
Or I cannot be good at math.
You could.
I've tried my hardest.
You don't. You don't care about it. But I think comedy is about, like, relatability, right? Yeah, it's just, like, there's broad comedy, there's, like, crazy, wacky things, and then there's.
I think that a good director can sell a joke in the sort of stuff that we're talking about of like, oh, it's a dramedy. You understand human nature. You understand timing. You understand.
Terry Malick, not funny. Rick's not that funny either.
But his movies are funny.
School of Rock.
Right.
And his Dazed movies are funny,
but he's not like none of us are. I'm not, I guess I have done improv, but I don't actively pursue comedy as a performer.
Yeah, I think it's. I always say I want to be the least funny person on set.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm,
and you are. So
yeah, typically, thank God.
Ooh, burn.
No,
that's not a good joke.
I've never been on your set.
It's kind of true.
It's not true.
That it is the goal, right? Like you want the funniest people to be in front of the camera, obviously. And you hear those stories of like the people who are like so funny that they're just untouchable and everything they say is incredible and all that stuff. And I don't think that that's totally important. But I think there is a big delineation between like a person who needs to be alting every single line and like plussing things and like, and a person who is in charge of a story and tension and human beats. And that those are kind of two different things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think there's there's different schools. There's Kentucky Fried Movie. I think you have to be funny to do one of those.
Well, that's like wacky.
Sure. But what I'm saying, or an episode of 30 Rock. Like a joke a minute.
Right. Also wacky.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I thought his question was more like, can you make it without
comedy
work? No. I think that is a question. But maybe we're diving in deep. The answer is yes. You can definitely do it.
I think it's about branding yourself regardless. Right.
But in terms of like, if you're just starting out or you just moved to LA and you're trying to break in, the other thing I see happen all the time is people make like an amazing sci-fi short or an amazing horror short or horror feature. And those ways are ways in too. And you can go for straight drama, but no one will watch it.
You can. We've seen like stylized thrillers or like heightened sort of
action
sort of stuff. Yeah. It's hard to do a straight drama. Like you should go do like one acts in New York.
Yeah. But what about like a movie like The Lobster? Is that funny?
I don't know how those movies get made, honestly.
I didn't love The Lobster, but I'm not cool for not liking it.
I think
a lot of people didn't like it. Yeah. But I guess I think we talk about comedy a lot because it is a way that forces you to just like have a million ideas real fast. Mm-hmm. We talk about improv because it's an exercise that helps you get into like your writing brain. And you go to a UCB class, what we're like always suggesting to people on it. I will admit I've not taken many UCB classes, but I know a lot of people that have, and half the people in the like beginning improv classes don't want to be writers, want to be actors. Yeah. They're like literally college students that are like, hey, I heard this is like fun.
Like 101 classes, half your classes, like, my boyfriend got this for me because like I have a lot of public speaking. We heard it was a cool thing to do. You know, like that's a lot of that.
And then the other half are actors who said my agent or manager told me to take this class.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's about.
It's so much fun.
It's about building a community and it's about getting into the mindset of creating and writing and being okay with like making bad jokes, right? And like failing and stuff.
I think the other thing that maybe Ewan is asking about though is that we have kind of unintentionally outlined a little bit of a path for success. Right, where you take these classes and you do a couple videos for a Funnier Die or College Humor, and then you get to do a funny branded thing, and then you start getting paid to do your work, and then you get to do the premium shows, and then you move your way up, basically. And so I think maybe the other thing he's asking is how do you do that if you're not interested in or especially skilled at fart joke internet videos, right? We know how to turn that into a career, incredibly enough. But how do you do if you just want to do straight drama? And I don't know that I have a great answer.
Well, festivals, even though I think it's sometimes easier to program comedic films in festivals, the ones that win are largely
almost
not
always
comedies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make an awesome short and win Sundance.
It's that easy.
It's that easy.
13,000 people submit to Sundance every year.
But let's talk about, though, because this show is about, in a lot of ways, the middle class director, like the other ways in which, you know, our peers are making a living doing non-comedic work. So there's like a lot of lifestyle spots. Like you can do a lot of lifestyle commercials out there.
You could be a more of a visual person. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're interested in fine art, that's maybe the way to go.
Fashion videos, or those are
big. Animation, mixed media, documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm like, I think Sawhorse right now, they have like 10 jobs and maybe like one of them is scripted.
Wow.
You know, it's like all, or like they're all kind of scripted. They're people talking to the camera, you know, doing things. Right. That's like what, if you do a good job at, like you have, on your website,
quite a bit of those.
Yeah, like that hockey one, like voiceover with just really pretty shots of people doing things that they're talking about. Like that will probably get you work better than like a funny sketch, right?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of about how you feel like you present yourself best. And if comedy's not that way, then
There are tons of jobs that aren't comedy, especially sci-fi, drama, style. I think there's tons of ways in that aren't comedy. We just happen to know that path because that's what we have all done.
Right. Cool. Well, hopefully that's helpful.
Thanks, Ewan.
Yeah.
And thanks for maintaining the website, buddy.
Yeah. So our next question is from Jumai Yusuf. And Jumai says, hey, love your podcast. I just got accepted to the MFA Film and TV Production Program at USC and will be starting school in the fall.
Woo woo!
And I know Matt is a USC alumni, unfortunately for him. I'm super excited about film school, but nervous about the huge cost. So my question for Matt is, what was your first job or gig after graduating? How did you make an income and start paying back student loans? And did you, Carlin, have student loans and all
I
that stuff
I do have student loans. I have student loans from 2 years at NYU before I went to University of Texas at Austin, which I didn't have student loans for because it's way more affordable.
And you're local.
Right.
So like that's right. So I get in-state tuition.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 years of NYU.
I was $50,000 in debt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I've shaved away half.
It is no joke. It is a significant thing. So if you don't have scholarships or if you don't come from means, it is a real decision for sure. It's a funny thing to say, but it's not a joke. I'll be 55 when I'm done paying off my student loans. And I am super grateful for that education and really loved it. But it is a major life decision that I'm glad that Jemai is going to grad school because I think that it's a little bit more of an informed decision in terms of like what you're taking on and things like that. Like to be an 18-year-old who's like, I'll take on $75,000 worth of debt. Let's do it. Because there'll be a company that will lend you that money. Mm-hmm. You know, Sally Mae is like, here you go, take it. So how do you start paying that back? You know, those first couple jobs are going to be challenging. You're not going to get like a super lucrative backup job early on. You know, like you are still starting at the beginning. It's like mailrooms. It's assistant work or crewing, kind of whatever path you want to take. But there is a built-in camaraderie and system and pedigree that comes from having a USC or a UT or a UCLA attached to your name, you know? So it's hard. Like there's not a great answer, basically.
Yeah,
it took me 10 years before I was directing professionally in any capacity.
I do think one skill, I mean, I always say this, but I think the skill that you can get that will lead to the quickest paying work is knowing how to edit, you know? And I think you do like 5 free jobs off Craigslist or for your friends or whatever, and you'll get a paying gig. And it might not pay amazing at first, but to me, editing is the easiest way if you want to still stay creative and get a paid job, because people...
I wish I would have done that, and I didn't.
Yeah. Well, writing is much harder, but if you can break into that...
I can get paid more eventually.
Yeah, or even it's like you're a little closer to the directing... I think you're creating the story in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you're marketing yourself better than an editor can.
Right.
I think there's really a question of the difference between like wanting to make money and what you cap out at with that money, and how much you want to guide your own career and the things that you were making, right? Because I think that editors can make a great living, and, you know, who knows, at the end of my lifespan, and, you know, Jody McVeigh-Schultz, who edits a ton, we were contemporaries, like, I bet Jody will probably net out making more money than me because he's been professionally editing awesome shows for a long time. But, you know, there were some shows that he didn't like at all and, like, kept cutting, basically, mm-hmm. and, like, had to make some hard decisions to pivot out of that stuff.
He
and
loved
did it.
Duck Dynasty, though, right?
Oh, my gosh. I worked on A&E's second highest rated show behind Duck Dynasty, Shipping Wars. I was a field producer.
That's cool. That's A&E. Another way. Yeah. I mean, unscripted.
Yeah, if you go into unscripted, you can make your cash.
Yeah, I made more money when I was 23 and 24 doing that than I have. This year, maybe. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Yeah. I made more that year than I have yet.
And that's creatively fulfilling in a sense, right? If you...
Yeah.
Whether you like the show or not, like, you determined storylines. You were in the shit, you know,
saw
like...
the country following truck drivers around.
I mean, you learned how to tell a story where there was no story, right?
Yeah, you have to execute beats and negotiate with the network and the producers. And there was a lot of... managing personalities that was actually quite useful.
Yeah, that's a real trial by fire. I didn't realize you did field producing.
Yes, I think Abby Fuller, who was on our show, kind of started in a similar way and ended up directing like Chef's Table. And
that makes sense.
All that.
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day, like, a business you could start pretty easily is putting actors on tape for auditions. It's like takes almost no equipment, and you just read with actors, put them on tape, put it on Vimeo or whatever, get a Vimeo Pro account and a nice LED light or something, you know?
So to me, that falls in the same sort of realm as like crewing, where there's a very clear cap to how much money you can make. You know, your day rate can go up, but at a certain point, there's only so much that an AC can make, or only so much that a best boy makes or whatever, you know?
I guess
there's only so many...
Right.
Actors you can put on tape in one day.
There's two types of jobs. There's the one that kind of pushes you forward into your career, and that's the one where, like, you might need to take an unpaid internship or work in the mailroom or whatever. And then there's the job that kind of makes you money but still keeps you in the film industry, which I think is, like, that, like, crew work or doing something like that.
I mean, the real truth is, like, you'll find your way, and, like, there are a lot of things that are going to surprise you along the way. You know, you're going to find out, like, oh, I hate editing, or, oh, I love editing, and that's my dream. And, like, you can make a good living in any department. And so just kind of get in, get your hands dirty. Don't be afraid to, like, meet people, try things out, make cool stuff. Don't spend too much on your thesis film.
Seriously. That's a big mistake.
Yeah, and I've seen... I was undergrad.
Yeah.
But I've seen plenty of... super duper talented people get told that your thesis film is going to be the thing that makes your career. Do you know what I mean? And so it can be romanticized and seductive to be like, all right, I'm going to, like, this is the chance. This is my shot. I haven't seen a thesis film make someone's career ever.
I think I have.
I think I have too. I'm just trying to think of examples.
Madeline is also saying that she overspent on her.
Yeah, Madeline is like, thesis. She's on the computer like screaming, like, no, stop them, please. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have for sure worked on a student film that made the DP's career, which was the USC one.
That's a different deal, though. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And it was like $120,000.
But yeah, there's a lot of schools that are down to. Encourage you to do things the right way, a certain way. And if you have the means and it's not a big deal, you know, that's a different story. But, like, most people don't live in those circumstances. And so...
Oh, I think Wes Ball,
basically.
He got, like, a student Oscar or something. And I think Jessica Sanders, do you know her?
Yes, that's who I was.
Oh, I think she was nominated for an Oscar, too.
A student Academy Award for her thesis.
So... But it's a documentary, right?
It can help you. No. Like a good a good thesis, a good short. Like,
but you just don't know.
But you don't know.
You just don't know. Actually, it could be great and it could not hit.
The odds of one of your first films being amazing is...
Yeah. Would I bet $100,000 that the third film, the first real movie I ever made, was going to make my career? Would I bet $100,000 of my own dollars on that? No. No, I wouldn't do that.
Right.
And so, you know, I think just be smart, be tactical. And there's a lot of great ways to make movies that don't cost that sort of money.
Cool.
So, well, so don't get jealous or nervous when your classmate is like, oh man, you're not shooting on the, you know, new Super Alexa with the Cook S4, blah, blah, blahs, and my crew's 1,000 people. There's always going to be those people, and they can afford it. And like, that's not going to make their movie good, and it's not going to make their movie bad.
Right.
That's all. Yeah. So go get it. Keep us posted.
So our final question comes from...
Hey guys, Oren and Matt, thanks for the shows. Longtime listener, this is Jeff from Olympia, Washington, and Skybear Media. Just calling to ask you, I'm really curious, Oren, that you mentioned in the last show that Phoenix is now becoming a new, shooting space, whatever. That's very interesting to me because I'm actually from there. So if you can elaborate on that more, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks.
Cool. So Jeff... from Olympia and Skybird Media is, thanks for calling us in again. You want to know what the deal is with shooting in Phoenix. And unfortunately, I have not shot there yet. I'm up for a job that I might get that shoots there, but I've not gotten it. I'd heard that Phoenix is a good place to shoot.
It's like a new hotspot, huh?
If you're trying to avoid unions and want to fly actors in from LA and stuff. But fortunately, Carlin has shot in Phoenix.
I have. It's been a few years.
Oh, so maybe...
So maybe it's changed. The one thing that I remember shooting about, the crews are super nice. It was hot. Very hot.
Yeah. The rumors are true. It is hot.
Right.
It is hot in Phoenix.
A lot of chain restaurants.
Sure. Great tacos, though. I'll send you recommendations. I have some friends in Phoenix.
I'm from Texas, so.
And they got a great sheriff
it
there.
It is a different deal there.
Great sheriff. Okay. But the one thing I felt, when I was shooting there... There's two things that were kind of interesting. Because there's not, at the time, this was maybe 3 years ago, I was doing University of Phoenix videos.
Which I'm actually kind of shocked.
Everyone is. They're like, wow, you actually did them there. I'm like, yeah, we did University of Phoenix videos in Phoenix.
I always thought it's like an online university.
It is, but we did a bunch of like corporate videos for them in Phoenix.
Sure.
At the time, there was only so much crew there. And so people could charge kind of extraordinary amounts. Like, I remember... a gaffer for a pretty small thing was like, I'm, you know, only will be paid $800 a day, and that's right. my rate, and
I do a 6-hour day.
Yeah, and also the baseball season is a big thing because look, I don't know much about sports, but apparently it's one of the training centers.
Mm.
It's like there's one in Phoenix, so half the teams in the baseball league. Hold on.
In the baseball organization.
Oh God, this is embarrassing. Whatever the pro baseball teams, half of them train in Phoenix and half of them train somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And during training season, so much of the video and film crews are working on those videos that it was kind of hard to find crew.
I was like, what's going on with this baseball stuff? So everyone's just booked on baseball stuff.
Everyone was booked on baseball stuff for when we were there. And then people charged. I was like, more power to you, because really we only got three gaffer names and... They all charged $800 a day or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Is it a right to work state, Arizona? Do we know?
I don't know. Is there tax incentives in Arizona now? Is that what you were implying?
Well, no. I had a shoot that flipped, and I guess, you know, a lot of people are having trouble affording to do union shoots, but they're also having trouble working here without the unions. Mm-hmm. And so what someone had told me is that they heard that a lot of people are shooting in Phoenix now because it's pretty close to here. Mm-hmm. And you can find some decent locations and I think decent crew. And maybe it's during the off season or the season.
Baseball off
season. The on season.
I don't know.
When they're not busy and you can fly in actors or you can bring in. Supposedly there's like an okay actor pool in Phoenix. I'm this is all hearsay, so I don't know if any of this is true, but it's. What I heard.
I can't say I'm very fond of the Phoenix International Film Festival. I've gone a couple times.
The fifth?
That's not what they call it. But
classic Oren remark.
Yeah, that is.
Thanks.
Hi-yo. And that scene and that community, I think, is interesting. I think there's a little bit of overflow from, like, New Mexico. Like, I think people will kind of bounce back
and forth. I like
New
Mexico people.
Yeah.
They're weird.
Yeah, yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, the sun bakes your brain a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Austinites.
Austin's right? So corporate now. It's a different town.
It's not weird.
I sound like such a cliche.
You sound like someone from Austin.
I really do. Austin has really changed.
Who moved away from Austin?
Yeah, I left Austin because I was like, cool, this is basically LA. May as well live where more jobs are.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Can we circle back to that? Well, real quick, Jeff, I hope that kind of answered your question.
A half answer.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of a thrown away remark.
Yeah, you know. Well, yeah. We don't know, but if you actually have information about it, Jeff, since you are from Phoenix, let us know.
Or any other listeners. I actually know for sure there's a few hardcore listeners who live in Phoenix.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And if I find out anything else, I will talk about it as well. But yeah, I was going to ask you, Carlin, you're still happy you made the move, right?
Oh, yeah. This year was the year that I think this the was tides breakthrough turned.
Year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cemented it.
Yeah.
This is a tight commercial.
And what changed for you? What do you think was the thing?
I started getting more work. That's what happened.
Well, I guess what I mean is, why do you think you got more work?
Oh.
Just like roots, or like your reel got better, or, I mean, you did sign to new representation.
Yeah.
I think it's probably really all of the above.
It's probably
really
all the above. Yeah. I think I've talked about this on the show, but Austin is such an easy city to live in. People are so nice. It's a lovely quality of life. And because of that, you can get a little bit complacent. Mm-hmm. So I had realized I had made my feature, but I hadn't made any shorts in a while. I was just kind of letting jobs come to me. My writing was slacking off a bit. And when I moved to LA, I was like, oh, shit. I've got to get my life together.
You got that hustle.
I got the hustle. And I made 3 shorts in a year.
Whoa, 3? I didn't realize that.
I guess in a year and a half, yeah. Just little comedy shorts. The third one being Nice Ass, which did pretty well.
Opened South by, right? At South by?
It was the opening night. It was the festival.
No.
The ass opened.
It premiered.
3 minutes long opening night film. Yeah, it premiered at South by. And is a Vimeo staff pick and stuff.
It's a running joke. We'll say, like, oh, if you need an ass costume.
Please, God, someone take it.
Yeah. If you want to follow in Carlin's footsteps, you literally can.
It could be any body part, really. Any sort of... It could fleshy be a, breasts,
yeah, yeah.
Scrotum,
like a nose.
Oh, the butt even? Costume yeah. passes yeah, yeah. for a lot of parts. Could,
yeah. yeah,
can it look? Can it look like the inside of an elbow pit?
Absolutely, it's a versatile costume.
I have a story about an elbow, and I'm looking for a good opponent.
Great.
Maybe your ass costume can work. Well, cool. So I just wanted to close with one final email that we got today. That's just like a thank you email. It's from Alex Grybaskis, but I think he goes by Alex Gry, according to his website. He says, hey, I used Film Casualty for insurance on a shoot last week off your ad, and it was really amazing.
Yay!
So that's cool. Cameron was insanely helpful. There we go. They got their sponsorship worth of money already.
That genuinely makes me feel really relieved, because we want our ads to feel like they're valuable to people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah, and he also says, after hearing Matt's story about sending that email that you've been procrastinating on to get things moving, I was inspired to hit up a network contact I'd lost touch with and had been putting off reconnecting with, sent that email, and it kicked off a whole flurry of activity, but now I have things going on with them.
Cool.
So, plus your guests have been crazy dope lately, especially tonight's guest.
Thank you, Alex.
Anyway, he says, thanks again for everything. Hope to make the next live show, which is something we are actively working on.
I had to miss
figuring
the last
out a
one.
Date.
Oh, yeah.
You should come to the next one.
I will be there.
Anyway, yeah, thanks, Alex. It's awesome. Yeah, I mean, sending, like, when all else fails, email everyone you know. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or,
and don't expect responses from all of them or you will be disappointed.
Yes, and keep it positive, too.
Yeah.
Don't email them asking for a job. Email
Seriously.
Them telling them they have an opportunity because your schedule just opened up for 2 weeks.
Yeah, there is a real skill to, like, asking for work when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
That
I'm not sure I figured it out, but yeah. I'm happy to hear your tips.
I don't know that there's really a perfect way to do it.
Mm-hmm. The best way is to either make a new reel, make a new website, or make a short film and show and it to
update
people.
Them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Come up with a reason to show people something. Well, cool. Well, thanks, Carlin. Oh, should we do unpaid endorsements?
We should.
Unpaid endorsements.
Ooh, Carlin, if you've got one locked and loaded, let's hear it.
Yeah, I do. It's a kind of a two-parter, but there's this book that I've been reading called Deep Work.
Mm.
I can't remember the author, but it's more of the concept of deep work, meaning totally unplugging and learning how to refocus in this kind of era of distractions and how emails and certain things can derail you in a real big way. Yeah, I've just been putting aside a certain number of hours each day to do my deep work. And I use this program called Inbox Pause by Boomerang, and you can pause your inbox.
Like
and,
your regular, like the mail app Gmail. On your phone? Oh,
yeah.
Or Gmail on
yeah,
your computer.
Gmail or Yahoo or whatever. But you can also, it's pretty advanced. Like if you, like I have stuff for this job, and so if certain email addresses you want to come through, you can program it to have except for these people who I would still like to hear from. And so I've been really unplugging for a few hours each day because of this book, Deep Work, and because of Inbox Pause.
Ooh,
cool.
Yeah, double whammy.
I recommend it.
I like that. How many hours do you unplug for?
I'm at 2 right now.
That's pretty good.
But I'd like to get up to 4.
Yeah.
That's my goal. It depends what we're, you know.
Yeah,
what yeah, you're doing. Sure.
Yeah.
I think they're like figuring out the sweet spot of how many hours you can be productive writing wise for, I think is a thing that I've been thinking a lot about. So actually dovetailing off that, I started listening to a book called What I Talk About When I Talk About Running.
Ooh, yes.
Oh, Oren, do you like it?
Did I bet them? You I found out about it the same way you did.
Mm. Remind me, maybe I don't know how I figured it out.
Brian Koppelman.
Yes! Yeah, good one.
Who's
yeah, yeah.
that?
So the last episode, was it the last episode? On a recent episode, Gareth Emery, who was the star and one of the writers of CVNT5, recommended these Vine, a compilation of Vine tips, basically, from this writer, Brian Koppelman. And one of them was talking about this book. And so I had a spare Audible credit and started listening.
Cool.
And he does really talk a lot about running, like a surprising amount about running. So it's by Haruki Murakami. I don't. No, no, no. But I love like a good meditation on deep thinking and like personal insight, and he's, you know, a famous writer, so I was like, oh, this is something that I would be interested in. I'm sure Madeline is typing right now because she's a runner. And
what's the name of the book one more time?
What I Talk About When I Talk About Running.
I want to check that out.
So yeah, it's about running and also the nature of writing and self-discipline and all of that stuff. And so yeah.
Similar kind of
similar
books.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, similar books. And then I feel like I had something else. Sorry.
It's just not to sound too woo-woo, and I'm really not, but I have noticed my anxiety decrease in a big way by not checking my email so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do we... I'm checking my email to hope that like a job came through. Who knows, right?
It's the endorphin kick.
Yeah.
That's the real thing. It's like you want to feel a little bit better, like a little bit validated of like, oh, someone wants to work with me, or like money is coming in or whatever it is. Like that's really why I check my email.
Me too. But right now, I'm trying to develop a couple things because that is my long-term career plan and I have to keep that in mind. But in the short term, it's so much more fun to check my email and get that high of not set aside time to focus.
And that keeps you from actually doing the work that you want to do.
I derail very easily too. Yeah. I need all of these tools.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And so the other thing that maybe they talk about in the book or maybe it just has come back to me is stopping before you're completely done, right? So when you're writing, do a substantial amount of work, but don't, you know, let the gas tank empty out, because then when you come back, you don't know where to start. But like if you're kind of in midstream, basically, then it's so much easier to jump back into it.
Cool.
So those are the things I've been obsessing over and checking my email. So I can't wait to not do that.
So much fun.
Cool. Well, I will double dovetail off of that with another two-part endorsement that's related. It's like, this is like writing 101, but for some reason, I think I watched these Brian Koppelman vines and also got inspired and he mentioned the morning pages from The Writer's Way. Sure, yeah. You guys know about that?
Mm-hmm. From Artist's Journey.
Oh, I like
it's
the
not the writer.
The Artist's Way.
That book's great.
Sorry, The Artist's Way. She talks about writing just three pages as soon as you wake up. Just mm-hmm. write three pages and don't even worry what you're writing. But it's about, she calls them your morning pages. And she says it's like morning, like M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. It's like getting all the junk off your brain and into a place where you're ready to be creative. She recommends you do it longhand on a notepad, but I like literally don't even know how to write with my hand anymore. So I was typing it and like text edit and trying to find different programs. And there's this website, it's called 750words.com. Have you heard of it?
Chrissy is a lifer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my wife, like she's about to hit 1,000 days in a row.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She does 750 words a day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're like throwaway words.
It's like free form.
It's like literally like I'm sitting here trying to figure out what I'm going to type today.
Huh. Yeah.
Maybe I'll make my to-do list. Right. Yeah, but this, you know, I'm really stuck on this part of my movie script. Like, well, here's one thing I can do, but that's dumb. But I guess this is better. Yeah, it's just like you're forcing yourself to write and it's keeping a tally of how many words you've written. So, yeah, it's cool. I'm on day like 8 of the morning pages, but on day 3 of 750words.com today.
And they do a little bit of gamifying, right? So you get different statuses.
Yeah, you get like badges.
That's important. Yeah. I think rewarding yourself is very important.
Yeah.
And then totally unrelated to everything, Caliphate, the podcast, New York Times podcast, is so good. I listened to almost the entire thing yesterday. It's like 9 episodes.
Caliphate?
Yeah. It's about this New York Times journalist. She covers like the Taliban and ISIS and stuff. She finds a guy, a Canadian guy that was in ISIS, like an ISIS guy that killed people and is back in Canada. And she just starts interviewing him about his day-to-day life, how he got into ISIS, what he did there, and how he got out. And it's fascinating.
That sounds
Anyway, that's it. This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe, and our webmaster is Ewan Williams, who sent us a question. Thanks, Ewan. Our producer is Madeline Rosewatt.
We're on all the social media platforms at Just Shoot It Pod. You can tweet at us there and send us any short questions, or you can tweet at me at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And me at Smitey Pileg.
And Carlin at
Hey Carlin.
And don't forget, if you have any questions or comments or thoughts, please let us know at justshootitpod@gmail.com. And leave us an iTunes review, please.
Yeah, we love those iTunes reviews. The music that you were listening to right now is by the artist Jazar and was provided by the Free Music Archive.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.